Additions, deletions?
Yes, there is. I'm going to pull items 8.3.7 and 8.3.8 for future meetings.
Any other changes? Okay, public comments. Is there anyone here who would like to speak on items not on the agenda? Then we'll move on to superintendent report.
Good evening. Jeremy gave me a suggestion that I kind of frame my superintendent reports around our primary goals and kind of what we're doing to work towards those things, and I thought that was a nice way for me to think about what I bring back to you. So, Jeremy, thank you for that suggestion. And thinking about goals 1 and 3 for the district and academic success and preparing all of our kids for college and career readiness, I want to talk a little bit about the MTSS retreat days that we held on February 6th and yesterday that included teachers, coaches, site leaders. And the focus of the 2 days was our multi-tiered systems of support framework and the work that we're doing with our supplemental resources to meet the needs of all kids. And the process of the 2 days is also going to be used to inform our LCAP and revisions that might may be recommended, using also the lens of our stakeholder input. You know, so we're going to run the recommendations that came through that through the lens of our stakeholder input and have that inform how we revise the LCAP this spring. And it was a really energized, exciting couple days with full engagement of teams with only a lunch break for a half hour each of those 2 days. And we went solid for all that time. The Latino Role Models Conference on February 2nd at Cabrillo College. I can't remember which annual one it is. It started at Harbor High School, I think, in about 2010 or 11. And it was an opportunity to hear the success stories of first-generation college graduates and college students, for students and families to learn about Cabrillo College and financing options there and support options and resources there. I also had a chance at that event to meet the new Cabrillo College president, Dr. Matthew Weckstein, and he gave a welcome to that event. And I want to thank Dee Dee for attending and all the staff who worked to make it possible. It started out as a Santa Cruz City Schools event with the support of some of our community coordinators. Now it is sponsored by Senderos and many of the districts in the county and Cabrillo College. So it's grown into a wonderful event, and the Mexican consulate. The Consulado de Mexico is there. Our mayor David Terrazas was there, and as a result of our conversation with the Consulado, David and I are going to be having lunch with the Mexican consulate a week in 2 weeks to talk about the needs of our families. Our immigrant families in our community. In terms of fiscal resources to support our work, and thinking about goal number 5, yesterday I met with two of our county superintendents, Michelle Rodriguez, Dr. Lori Bruton, and the director of curriculum assessment, Michelle Stewart from Scotts Valley, and math coaches and math teachers from all of our districts, made a proposal through S4C to the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz to continue the work of the Gates Foundation grant on teacher professional development in mathematics. And the foundation, we met with Susan True, the new CEO of the Community Foundation, and Christina Cuevas and Julie Hoff, who are on the board. They're very excited about the work that has been accomplished through the S4C Gates grant and are interested in looking at continuing to support our elementary teachers with ongoing professional learning and mathematics and stipends for summer learning and evening learning and supporting the teacher advisory committee that informs all of that work. So we were pleased to be able to have some, you know, they asked us to submit an application, and
let us know that we weren't going to have to follow the same path as applicants normally do. At the same time, S4C is also working on a new Gates grant. Our grant sunsets this summer. And the Gates Foundation has invited us to apply, but not for our elementary, but for our secondary schools. So the Community Foundation could potentially fund the elementary part of the program, and we're going back to the Gates Foundation to continue the work for secondary. In terms of collaborative professional learning community work, goal number four, our work to support the professionals, the efficacy of the professionals in our organization. On Saturday, there was a voluntary training called Design Thinking for Educators. And Superintendent Menlo Park and someone from the design school at Stanford came and took 40 educators, teachers, coaches, school leaders, who just decided to give their Saturday, because they were interested in learning about this, about how to use design thinking for problem solving. And it was a really, it was an exciting day. We also had students there, because part of the process of using the design process is to really design something for your end user and to interview your end user. So we went through a design process and designed, we were in small groups and we were assigned the task of either designing a learning space for students or designing a celebration for students. And so we went through the whole process and we had kids that had volunteered also to spend their day with us and participate in that. And we learned a lot. And we had a donor that generously donated some money to bring that to us. Michael Kaufman, who's worked with us in the past, and also three of our administrators gave up their Title II professional development allocations to support bringing that day for 40 educators in our district. In terms of recruiting and retaining the best team for our students, this a week ago Tuesday, the Personnel Commission heard the first reading of the Ewing Classification Study that was done for the Personnel Commission. On the dais is a copy of the classification study for you. The process of updating these job descriptions and classifications was really important for our district. It had been far too long since we had gone through that. I want to thank Kinney and Jory and Denise for their work to support that effort. I also really want to thank all the employees who participated in surveys and interviews and document review to inform that study. The Personnel Commission is going to make some recommendations after they've had time to review the study further, and we'll bring those recommendations to you at a future date. In terms of goal number six, a partnership with our community, our secondary schools all held their open houses this last month. I want to publicly thank all of the teachers, the staffs, the leaders for creating opportunities to highlight and celebrate all the strengths of our campuses for incoming students and their families. I had lots of people talk to me about how excited they are and their kids are to be joining our high schools and our middle schools in the coming year. I shared some of the students' videos that have been made. And both those videos that I put in my weekly update had been made by students, and other schools had videos on display and other things to share about their campuses. On March 5th at 6:30, we are going to host a neighborhood meeting in our Natural Bridges campus, our Natural Bridges neighborhood. Johnny Cardinale from the Natural Bridges Children's Center, Corey Vestal from Head Start, and Zach Roberts from Gateway will all be available so we can introduce our new tenants to the neighborhood. The 5th, Monday the 5th at 6:30. And I wanted to make sure you all knew about that, and I'll put it out to you too in the weekly update so you have it. It will be an opportunity for us to also to share the bond work plan for that site and connect with our neighbors. And if you can let me know if you plan to attend, then I can let you know if you can participate, or if it's going to be one of those kind of events that the board just attends because if we have more than a quorum, then we can just be present without participating. But if you'd like, there's fewer than four of you, I can also ask you if you want to speak or be a part of the presentation.
Is it going to be the same place it used to be?
No, it's not going to be in the front pod because Head Start is occupying that now. So we're going to, I talked to Trevor tonight, either we're going to do it in the main building or we're going to do it in the gym. So that's it for this evening.
Thank you. Student reports are next.
At Sanders High, we just had the soccer senior night, the girls' soccer senior night this past Thursday, and basketball senior night was on Friday, which was really exciting. There was so much spirit, and then I had never seen so many people in the crowd for the girls' game, which was nice, because that carried over to the boys' game. It was against St. Francis, and it was a full sweep. Everybody, Santa Cruz beat everybody, or beat St. Francis all the way through. It was just a really nice night and a lot of spirit and attendance.
Thank you.
Was it also senior night for the boys or just the girls?
It was for the boys too.
We also just finished our boys soccer senior night, our girls soccer senior night, and our basketball senior nights for the boys and girls. And now we're working on our spring events for our Spring Spirit Week, our rally, and our dance coming up. And we're starting to lean over a little bit into more of prom also, work on that stuff.
Thank you.
I had the opportunity after the governor's budget, the COE, along with Capital Advisors, puts on a January budget meeting, and I would like to thank Michael Watkins and Jack O'Connell, who actually speaks at it, for giving us an overview. I know that the district will be bringing one that you also attend from Sacramento, but kind of have a local one and to be able to attend. Capital Advisors will again do this after the May revise and then again in the summer after the budget. So it really just gives you the opportunity to have a bit more in-depth look at the budget. And the thing about Jack O'Connell is, since he was State Superintendent of Education, he gives you his political insight. And so it's really a lot of fun for nerdy budget people like myself. So I'll quantify that. I attended the City Schools, Santa Cruz City School, Santa Cruz City meeting, and I'm happy to have a collaborative with the city and the work that's been done. Lots of good information flows through, and I'm happy to be part of that. I also attended, on that lines, the constituent meeting for the Soquel community, or I believe it's Supervisor District 2 with John Leopold. These are important to me personally to attend. I enjoy seeing the pulse of the community, those who have something to say and what's most on their mind. Our campuses are a large part of different parts of our community, and some of the community will bring forward some of their concerns, so it's always nice to be open there and hear what they have to say. I've been busy this month and very much enjoying it. I want to say this. One of the things that I really enjoyed was at Santa Cruz High, the Santa Cruz Ed Foundation had a viewing of the movie Race to Nowhere. And it is really eye-opening to see the pressures that we put on our children here in the United States for the college track, or whatever they may be feeling as pressures, period. Whether I internalize them as the college track or not, but hoping really to have policy that supports all children, and my personal goal of having productive, happy people in our community, in that order. So that was part of it. Have the opportunity to stop by. The Soquel High baseball team does a fundraiser every year. What they do is they have a little mini camp for the Little League that is adjacent to the Soquel High campus. So all the Little Leaguers come up in different age groups, and they are coached by the high school students. And it's a really wonderful way that money is raised and that community is built. I think that the baseball program there is so successful because of that model. They start so so young, the students can see themselves becoming part of the school, and there's a connectedness. I do hope that the opportunity is there for our other baseball teams or girls basketball or whatever it is to offer these types of community fundraisers, because I think that it opens the eyes to the beauty of what public school can bring, and then we'll have more public school high schoolers. I know that it's on the agenda, but I see that Matt Farrell is here, and I'd like to thank him for his service and stepping up. We'll be talking about that a little bit further in the agenda. And then lastly, on September 3rd, I attended a lunch with the Save Our Shores group for offshore oil drilling, and it was well attended and by many politicos, but I'd like to point out that we had Congressman Jimmy Panetta and California Secretary of Natural Resources John Laird, but a person that I would really like to honor for the work that they do, and he said in my report, is Dan Hayflay. Dan Hayflay is part of Save Our Shores, or was part of Save Our Shores, and through his work, he helped spearhead the creation of the National Bay, the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, and worked as the co-chair of the Environmental Working Group to include passages of local ordinances that keep away offshore drilling. And I think that the Monterey Bay is what I enjoy to have as one of our best classrooms out there. And Dan has made it his mission and has argued the program's position that ocean concepts should be adopted in formal education standards and made more widely available to youth from economically disadvantaged backgrounds. And I think Santa Cruz City Schools has been fortunate to take advantage of that, and I'd like to thank Mr. Hayflay for it and those who marched on the 3rd. Thanks.
Attended the Latino Role Model Conference with Chris and many, many students and parents, and I agree with everything that Chris said, except I disagree that it only meets goal one. I think the Latino Role Model Conference serves to meet goal two, creating a positive, engaging school environment for our students, and goal three, eliminating achievement gaps. I think it's a wonderful event. It's inspiring for the students. And as a parent of a junior who was there with me, I think it's inspiring for parents because many of the speakers talk to parents about what we can do to better support our students as they go through this journey of K-12 education, moving towards hopefully higher education, and the struggles that they experience and how we can better support them as parents. So I really appreciate that we do this every year, and I appreciate that we support this very important event. I also did the Masters in Governance training on Friday and Saturday, course one and course two, all day, both days.
Wow.
I learned an incredible amount, and it was a good refresher course for me, so I did go back to school, and I did have homework, and I did do the homework at the last minute, I have to confess. But it's a great training program, and I appreciated it very much, and look forward to continuing my education as a board member. And I want to congratulate Deb, who graduated on Saturday from the Masters in Governance.
Thank you.
Okay, Deb?
Oh, I just wanted to acknowledge the horrific tragedy in Florida today. I don't really have any words, but I just wanted to acknowledge. That's my only report.
I also wanted to acknowledge what happened in Florida. I realized that we're getting so used to it now that it's hard to even stop and have feelings about it. But there was something about this particular time where the parents, they interviewed the parents whose kids had survived, but they hadn't known right away that the kids survived.
Yeah.
And they were trying to stay calm because they knew that there were people who had been hurt and killed. They didn't want to overdo it, but they were describing conversations with their kids where the kids were saying, "I'm sorry I was crabby this morning. I love you if I never see you again." And being the mother of a young adult, I found myself totally falling apart. The Connecticut, I can't remember his name, but the Connecticut senator was on, you know, who has been working so hard on this issue. And he made me feel hopeful in the sense that he said, we can't stop and we can't normalize it. We have to keep going. And we are making a difference. The numbers are growing of people who are willing to take on this issue. And so I also wanted to note it, but to say that we all have to remember that we're lucky to be in a district that has been trying really hard to be, you know, to have our kids be safe. But we can't stop. We can't stop until it turns. And his hope, he said it will turn. We don't know when, but we have to keep going. So I just wanted to say that. And along the other things I want to say don't have to do with me and things I did, but rather things that really strike me about this district. And one of them is a group of parents that came up with the idea of trying to have activities across all our elementary schools that are the same in terms of money spent and balance, and to have all the elementary schools working together. And those parents, when they first thought up the idea, were kind of discouraged because there were things wrong with how they were thinking and they didn't understand the whole district. They didn't stop. And they worked on it for a whole year and then came back again with an idea that was workable. Then they went to our Ed Foundation, who then said, we're going to help with this. And I'm really impressed by this because it also says something about our district, that people now have such ownership. Parents and teachers have enough ownership to the district that they feel like they can come in with ideas like this. And I'm not sure that I'm right about this, but my understanding is that that's also what happened with Race to Nowhere, that one of the parents felt so strongly about it and also felt that she wanted to help and get this out for everybody to see. And the Ed Foundation helped with it. Am I right about that? So once again, that combination of the Ed Foundation and people feeling like they can act within our district for something they believe in. And Race to Nowhere is going to be shown again in April on a Sunday, because not everybody could go on a Thursday evening. So these things give me a lot of hope, and I'm trying to use that hope for what really was devastating to me today to hear about the tragedy in Florida. And that's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. I have more positive news. Delta has one student traveling to Japan for the Sister Cities project, and several students have their posters exhibited at Pizza One in Aptos. They had their open house. It was well attended. I spoke with students, families, and teachers, and everybody's so enthusiastic. It was great. Wellness news. Well, the food services received a Humane Society Award for their efforts to enhance plant-based options on the campus and for their partnership with Forward Food. In March, there's going to be a rollout of Bay to Tray, putting local fish on menus, and fishermen are going to be visiting elementary schools to discuss what it means to be a sustainable fisherman. Okay, moving on to approval of the minutes. Your motion?
So moved. Approval.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay, so Sheila and Dee Dee.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? Okay, 7-0. Our next item is the consent agenda, and these matters may be passed by one roll call motion. Are there any items pulled for discussion? Jeremy?
Bunch. 8.1.1, 8.1.2, 8.1.3, 8.1.9, and 8.1.13.8. I'll repeat. 8.1.1, 8.1.2, 8.1.3,
8.1.9 and 8.1.13.8.
Point 8.
Yes, ma'am. Okay.
And Patty?
I just would like to have 8.1.13.4 for a short discussion before my vote.
I'm sorry, so is that pulled for a separate vote or just discussion?
Well, we decided to pull items.
I'm asking Patty. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
I'm just specifically asking Patty. Do you just have questions or did you want to pull it?
Did you pull it for discussion?
Pull it for discussion. It's just for discussion. I don't think it's anything. Well, actually, for vote. Okay, thank you. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, we decided to change.
We changed this.
Mm-hmm. Right, so we have. We'll be putting these items.
So the personnel actions will go at the end of the HR items. Yes. At
so that'll be all the way down.
Make it 8.3.10.1.
Yes.
No.
Oh yes. But that's all of them go there.
And then the one business one would go to 8.3.7 because we pulled 8.3.7.
Right. Okay.
And then you have the stairway caning 8.1.13.4 can move into the 8.3.8 slot. Could you pull that as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So which was that?
I'll try to remember.
That is number 8.1.13.4, a stairway painting agreement for the Harvard or Santa Cruz High School gymnasium.
I'll be calling on you, Nancy, to help. Thank
we
you.
We have a new system.
Yeah. So, Claudia, just to summarize, because this is a new protocol, the 8.1.1 and the 8.1.2 being personnel actions go under human resources at the end of the meeting. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the 8.1.3, the 8.1.9, and the 8.1.13.4 and the 8.1.13.8 involving financial matters go in that.
Actually, the 8.1.9 is also an HR matter, so that will go.
I suppose technically it could be.
That's just submitted at HR department.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it sounds okay. HR. All right. Is there a motion to move approval of the items other than the ones mentioned?
Move approval.
I'll second.
Sheila and Deb. And it's roll call. Student recommendation?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Thank
you. Gifts. Okay. Go ahead.
We'd like to note and accept with thanks the following gifts to the school district. For Bayview Elementary School, Ben Wolf donated stationery paper to the school. And for Santa Cruz High School, the Gino Pinelli Foundation donated $500 to the Santa Cruz High School girls basketball program. And an anonymous donation of $750 was made to the Santa Cruz High School boys basketball program. So we thank everybody involved.
Thank you. And report of closed session actions. Dee Dee.
The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsion 10-17-18 to prepare for a vote on these matters later this evening in open session. The Board of Trustees took action on certificated classified and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard an update regarding public employee discipline dismissal release complaint.
Okay, thank you. Now we have a vote on expulsion 10-17-18.
I'm sorry, may I ask a question?
Okay, I'm sorry.
So are you guys returning to closed session then?
No.
Oh.
No.
Sorry.
So I didn't hear anything about the meet and confers or the real property negotiations.
The real property.
Oh, we did talk about that.
Yes, yeah. The board did give direction on real property. The other two were delayed.
Delayed. So, but will you be returning tonight?
Just
no.
We're just,
okay, thank you.
Right.
That's okay.
Okay, a vote on expulsion
10-17-18. I think that's, I don't have it. I'm usually given it in writing. So, am I correct in saying I move to To expel and not
hold
to
uphold the recommendation to hold the recommendation to expel.
To uphold the recommendation to expel student 10-17-18.
I'll second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstain?
Thank you.
Who was the second?
Thank you.
Okay, we have some information about the Ed Foundation update.
We have a public comment.
What? Did I miss something?
There's some public comment in the agenda.
Did we not put public comment on the agenda?
No.
No, we had public comment. We did.
We had no public comment.
We had it at the beginning of the meeting.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Oh,
it was
that was public comment. Was there public comment on the consent agenda?
Oh,
no, never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to welcome the Santa Cruz Education Foundation this evening, who have come to present an update to the Board of Education. We have members of the Education Foundation Board led by President Stephanie Posh.
Hello. Thank you all for giving us the opportunity to provide you with an update on what we've been doing and what we have planned. I also wanted to acknowledge the other board members that are here with me this evening. We have Matt Farrell, Ulrika Santa Ana, Blanca Capella, and our newest, Angela Gangler-Dawson. And you'll hear more about the work that she's doing with the foundation in terms of her partnerships and the Explore for Kids program that was mentioned last year. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Blanca, who's going to give you guys a brief update. We're not going to do death by PowerPoint this evening.
Yeah.
And I know you guys have a very full agenda, so. All right.
So we only have five slides. So, okay, so Santa Cruz Education Foundation, in terms of vision and goals, there's a couple key words that we wanted to point out. So advocate, outreach, educate, and fundraise. Those are words we've used over the years. You probably know what most of those mean. Fundraise is at the end. I think a lot of times a lot of foundations, especially the ones in Silicon Valley, are just fundraising. Kind of charter is a little bit larger than that. So it's not just fundraisers. We want to point that out. Reimagining education. That's very similar to what Chris was talking about with the D-School thinking at Stanford. Kind of thinking, what are we trying to really do? How do we really bring the end user into the experience and think about what we're doing? Of course, we always want to do that in partnership and collaboration, right? But that's kind of one of our bigger things, and Olga has raised this a couple times about how we reimagine education. And then one of the questions that always comes up is, what's the difference between Ed Foundation and the PTAs and the homeschool club? And I think probably the easiest way to think about that is that we want to do everything on a district-wide basis, right? As a way to separate out kind of what the groups are trying to do. Because we're all trying to do something for the students, but, I think Angela's project with the support is a good example of that, of how we try to go across the district. I mentioned CS for All. I think we've talked about that project before. It's moving along. It's not as fast as I would like. Of course, nothing's ever as fast as I like. It is moving along, and I think we're making some progress, but we'll keep plugging along there. We like the little picture on the end. That was over Martin Luther King Day, just a few days ago. Okay, so partnerships. We talked about this before. So there's current and then in development. Obviously, the premier and most important partnership is, of course, the Santa Cruz City School District, right? I mean, I think that's obvious, but we just want to make sure everybody knows that. We also work with the parent groups, PTA, home and school clubs on different types of things. Local partnerships, things like fashion, art, that's a big production down in at the Civic every year. So we partner with them in terms of helping to put on the show, contributing some funds for that. We also do the Kids Explore After School program, and that's in development. Did you want to say anything about that, Angela?
Thank you. Sheila Rooney for your comments and encouragement and support in the process. We are really excited about filing in the fall, so we're working towards that. And one of the things that we will work, continue to work on as we head in towards the fall is working on the MOU with the district and the Education Foundation. And we're super excited about the Education Foundation support. You know, for me, through the whole foundation, it's a budget, it's a natural partner looking at all the elementary schools district-wide. So we're really excited, and I'm open to any questions, you know, either not at this meeting, but at other times. There's two other parents working on Explore with me, and we'd be delighted to talk about it more. So thank you.
Okay. Some of our in-development partnerships, Silicon Valley Education Foundation, we're working with them on a number of projects. The one that's probably most relevant right now is called Elevate Math, and it's a math program that's been proven to help boost math scores, so we're working through that. We're also doing a lot of work, but you know, we're trying to keep in contact with the County Office of Education. When we were talking about this Elevate Math program, we actually met with the county math people as well as S4C to make sure we're coordinated, because what we don't want to do is we swim there, you know, the wrong way across the current. But we're trying to make sure we're in alignment in terms of what everyone's trying to do, so that we can be good partners. And then one of the things that we really want to think about is local and regional businesses in terms of what it is that we're doing. We do have a new board member who could make it tonight, Dana Richards, and he's had extensive experience with CTE programs. And so we're trying to think about this as more of a pipeline for our students, right, in terms of how does CTE fit in at both the high school level and then for many of our students to continue on to places like Cabrillo College, kind of what does that start to look like? So at this point, it's more of this understanding. We're not proposing anything, but we're just trying to understand kind of what are all the different programs and all the pieces so that we can do some design thinking around that and figure out where does it make sense for the Ed Foundations to be involved or not be involved. Okay. One of the things we're also known for is celebrating educational excellence. The Eddy Awards, I think that the nominations went out. This year, the big difference is it's going to be at the Museum of Art and History. So in the past, it has been at the Palm de Death Center. And, we're feeling like, you know, it's time to switch it up a little bit and try some things. Olga and Nunn have been leading that effort. I don't know if you have any practice on it.
We just hope to see you there.
Nominations, and you can nominate anyone.
Yeah. And it's our 10-year anniversary doing this, so yeah. It's a big milestone in terms of what we're able to do for the teachers and the supporters in the community. So it's something that we take a lot of pride in. We're really looking forward to a great one this year. So.
And we're having, so Cal High is going to be providing the music and also helping us with our program and our flowers. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then moving forward, so one of the big concepts that we've been having some of our own strategy sessions and thinking about kind of, you know, where we want to go with the foundation and what they're trying to do. And one of the big things that's come out is, you know, how do we bridge the gap between private capital and public needs? So basically, you know, we know that Santa Cruz County and Silicon Valley is a fairly wealthy place, right? And, you know, we have a lot of needs at not only this school district, but across many school districts. So how do we start to think about, you know, matching needs with wants and kind of looking for these partnerships and what makes sense, right? So Dana's been very helpful in terms of giving us some insights in terms of what employers want for CTE and how do we start to match this up. So once again, we don't have any concrete proposals at this point, but we're thinking really hard about kind of what might that look like. And of course, we're always open to input. So if someone has ideas, you know, we're always open to any thoughts or ideas people might have. So then if our role is to advance innovation and best practices, you know, one of the things that we can do is we can be nimble, right, because we, you know, we're basically a nonprofit. We like to research ideas and add perspective, that we do our own thinking and talking to people and just trying to, you know, bring ideas to the table. And that's very much in line with what Chris was talking about with the concept of design thinking. And then we can support small pilot projects like Explore. Right? I think that's where we feel like we can have the most impact, is to, you know, take that design thinking model, try different projects, see what works, see what doesn't work, and not be afraid to fail. Right? If it doesn't work, okay, you run a small cost, low risk experiment, and if it fails, you know, and obviously you don't go and try and fail, but, you know, you have to be open to that, right? You say, well, it doesn't work, right? And then you move on and you try something else. And then I think Explore is a good example of that, right? I mean, we're starting small. So that's really all we had. The last slide here is, you know, we do want feedback from the board. We also understand that, you know, you guys have a lot on your agenda tonight, so we're not looking for necessary feedback on all your different ideas tonight. But Stephanie is always on email, so, you know, shoot her email, and I'm sure she'll share with the rest of us, and we can look at it. One of the main framing questions that we had is, you know, what do you guys see as urgent gaps or needs in the district that have not already been identified, right? And then what role might you envision SCEF playing to help bridge those gaps, right? So we're interested in your feedback in terms of how you see us today and also kind of how you see us moving in the future or what that might look like. So that's, I think, all we had. Unless anybody wants to add anything for the formal presentation.
So we just really appreciate the collaboration with the foundation. I meet with Stephanie and members of the board monthly, and so if you have a complex or idea, you don't feel like putting it in email, you can share it with me too, and I can relay it to them in our monthly meeting.
Thank you so much.
I have
questions
already.
Thank you.
Thank you all so much for what you do.
Sorry, Sheila had a
happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah. Sheila,
you don't get to leave yet because I was a little confused when I got to the urgent gaps or needs in the district that have not already been identified. You mean identified and acted on? Because, like, do we have to, I can't imagine anything we haven't thought about needing.
Wow.
But right. We haven't taken care of it all?
Most of the gaps are identified, especially through the work that Chris's department is doing. But if there's anything that for some reason seems to be glaring that might need more attention and more research or whatever.
Right. Sorry, I had a second one and I'm afraid I forgot it.
Okay, let's move to Jeremy.
I will, yeah.
And you can shoot an email or if you remember, shoot it to Chris.
Well, I'll think of it by the time
okay.
So Matt, I guess I have a question. For you, you were on the board for 8 years, and one of the things maybe you and I talked about even or have been in circles that have talked about it is that when we talk about the fraying of the safety net or the social net in America due to public policies, mainly public policies, you know, teachers are on the front line of that because they see that in kids having all sorts of issues. And I'm wondering, for you looking at Santa Cruz City Schools now, as opposed to when you were on the board 15 years ago, where do you think some of those needs are that we have now that we didn't? And what do you think the Eddie might do to help with that? I mean, you know, there's some obvious ones. We've got kids who are food insecure, I guess that's the way we put it these days. But I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Not to very on the spot. I'm very ignorant of current conditions in Santa Cruz City Schools because, unfortunately, I have no children. I guess it's fortunate in a way because I would want them to be in school forever, but I don't have any students there. But I feel like the challenges to try and build the collaboration between the board and the district, and I think we need to build our board, and I'm excited about the SCEF board that we've been going through a period of rebuilding, and so I think that's the first thing we need to do so we can get a better handle on things.
I got just a very brief follow-up. I mean, would it be in your, I'm posing this as a question, might you want to spend a day touring around the district, getting a sense of what's going on from site to site, talking to some of the people,
that might be helpful in terms of shaping.
It's a really, that's a good suggestion.
Because I think some of the things might be pretty obvious being at some of the sites. That would just be a suggestion.
Is there something else that comes to mind for you in terms of like what's obvious?
Well, only that I've noted, and I mean, this isn't a private conversation, yeah. That over the course of 35 years in Santa Cruz City Schools, it's pretty obvious that we're seeing, we're on the front lines more and more for all major, oftentimes perceived, at least by me, to be insoluble problems caused by the fraying of the social safety net. And maybe there'd be places where your foundation could fit in, because we have to put more and more resources to kids who are just in need in ways that they weren't.
Yeah.
On scales that they were 20 or 30 years ago, it seems to me. So that might be something to look at.
Hey, Sheila.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I actually have two. So is anybody else have any? Well, one thing is the CTE. I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited about this person you're having who has experience in this. And if you were going to have brainstorming sessions and you thought it was a nice idea to invite board members to listen in, you would have me because this is an issue that I don't have enough knowledge of, but I have a lot of feeling that we need to be going in that direction. So I'm very excited you're doing that. Thank you. The other thing that I wanted to ask is, do you have contact or are you planning to have contact? I know you're just rebuilding with the other, like the county supervisors, the other entities that may be having finances available for the kind of things that Jeremy was talking about.
Yeah, so we've started going down that route just more on an exploratory basis. For example, I went to the last Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting where they talked about Prop 63 money and mental health services and just trying to understand it at this point. But, you know, when Jeremy talks about fraying the social net, it's kind of like, so how do you tactically start to address some of those things? So we're just in the understanding phase at this point of like just making sure, there's a lot of moving parts here, right? Mm-hmm. Like how does it fit together? At the District Advisory Council meeting on Monday, Eileen Brown spoke about some of the work she's doing. So it's trying to just put together these pieces here. My own sanity and our own sanity, trying to juggle all of these, right? And how does it impact the elementary school after school program? We're just trying to think about all of this, and that's really what we've been spending a lot of time doing as a board in the last couple of months. But I like your idea, Sheila, of you or any other board member or whoever wants to come and brainstorm with us, right? We can think together.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
There's kind of good skills developing in the board too, like Rocco is very good at seeing networking opportunities, so he was in inviting us all to attend the reception for the new president of Cabrillo College, which I don't think we've ever as a board thought about that kind of relationship, which I think kind of gets to your answer or question.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I was really impressed by Angela, because I knew she was a pretty smart lady when I first met her, just because of what she was bringing forward. But I started to talk to her, and it turns out that she worked in the county of Santa Cruz for a long time, but before that... County of San Francisco.
Yeah.
But you also worked in Santa Cruz County, too, but she worked for Harvey Rose, who was, I think the auditor for the city?
The budget analyst for the city.
So she's... Mm-hmm. And so she went to John Leopold when the three of them started talking about this idea of an after-school program. And I said, well, John Leopold doesn't have anything to do with Santa Cruz City Schools. Why are you talking to John Leopold? She said, well, because our dream is that we would move this program across districts. And I thought, that's somebody who... Mm-hmm. As a plan,
that's somebody else.
So I'm really behind this because I think she can probably do that.
Yeah.
No pressure.
All three of them are like that, too. should get them all.
Okay. I just, as a former staff board member, want to thank you for continuing to campaign for kids and to work. The relationship with the district has ebbed and flowed over the years, and as has the board, and I really appreciate the effort you're putting in to continue to build the board and keep the mission going. So thank you. It's great. And the MA is a great improvement over the multi-purpose room at the B40 middle school, which is where we had our first. Yeah. Good job. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Our next item is Ed Services Curriculum Master Plan.
So this evening, I'm going to invite Julia and Mariana, our directors of Curriculum Intervention and Assessment, to give you an update on the development of the Curriculum Master Plan. Last March, a first draft of that plan was brought before the board in draft form with kind of thoughts about how we would move forward and implementing it. And since then, we have two new directors in Curriculum Intervention and Assessment, and they've done a tremendous amount of work looking at that, talking to teachers, and thinking about how we move best move forward. So I invite them here this evening with our Federation President, Casey Carlson.
All right, so the Curriculum Master Plan. I don't know if you've noticed, but I reused my graphic that I was so excited about from the last time because I felt that it was very appropriate to continue along the same thread. The Curriculum Master Plan is a document, a comprehensive document that we are drafting to ensure that we have a plan for the next 5 to 7 years and where we want to be in regards to instruction, in regards to curriculum, and in regards to professional development, really ultimately to ensure that all of our students are growing both socially and academically. So our Curriculum Master Plan involves a lot. That said, we're going to take you kind of through a quick history of where we've been, where we currently are, and where we hope to be within the next year. So you have, if one of your documents is the timeline, if you're in the audience, you might have it also. So we're going to be referring to this throughout our presentation. And really, this is for me and all of you linear thinkers who like to have something like, okay, where are we right now? We're right in the middle, February 2018, so you can see everything that happened before and then everything that we plan to do in regards to having a finished document. So let's go ahead.
So yeah, we started, this document was created last spring, as you see, and presented to the board in a study session, and that was our first draft. We've had, at that time, input from leadership, from administrators, from some teachers in last spring. And we looked at it at our admin retreats in our admin work in the summer. We looked at it in a little bit more detail and gave input yet again. So every step of the way, we've been gathering input on the curriculum master plan. In that input, we realized that we really needed to pare it down a little bit and provide focus to this plan. It was a little bit captured. It did a beautiful job of capturing everything that we were doing in our district. And some of the initial feedback that we received was that it was a little bit too comprehensive, that it was a little bit hard to see the focus and where we could go. It's hard to do everything all the time. So based on that input, we've made some revisions on to it, and we continue to roll it out to stakeholder groups as well. We're going to continue to provide focus on that plan. We just finished a two-day retreat with teachers, with site representatives, counselors, RTI coordinators, and administrators to, again, focus our work. Where are we going to spend our energy, time, money, resources right now in order to really move this plan forward? We have a lot of things going on. We have a lot of initiatives in the air right now. And it adds to the overwhelm. It really does add to the overwhelm to staff, to administrators, to leaders, to teachers, to how can we actually make a difference, improve our outcomes in our district. And so we really felt the need to focus on that.
All right, so Marianne touched upon a little bit where we are right now. I don't know how much you've heard about our leadership retreat. You guys, some, you've talked about it?
Okay.
Crystal. That's right. So we have really been trying to focus, like Marianne said, and what we did was we looked at our California dashboard, our CASP data, we looked at Healthy Kids survey data as a director's group and with Frank, and we really tried to synthesize where our greatest needs are and our greatest areas for growth. And I know you've all seen our CASP data, and we're not happy with it. We need to make growth. It's imperative that we make growth. And so as we were focusing on all of this data, four areas of focus really rose to the top. We need to work in our literacy, mathematics, our English learner progress, and then also school connectedness. And so our retreat really focused on those four areas, and we got a lot of great input on where we need to head. So now we have the chore of going through all of the input, making sense of it, and to really put that into our curriculum master plan and help guide our work. So, you know, a curriculum master plan really needs to be a living document. We do need to be able to edit it, to revise it based on the need and where we're at for staff and how we can move forward with that. I wonder if we should provide the timeline at this point. Just give us our timeline here. In fall of 2018, we plan on taking our second draft back to the teachers and administration for input. In the winter, we're going to be taking more revisions back to admin, union leadership, and teachers for the final review next winter. Hopefully, by February of 2019, 1 year from this month, we'll take the new vetted plan to you. We envision it like an accordion effect where Marianne and I will draft and work with a small group. We'll take it to admin and to teacher leadership groups. On your timeline, you can see we even have some dates that we've outlined when we plan to take and meet with teachers. We've been working with Casey to make sure that we're being thoughtful about our process and getting meaningful feedback and input. Up to this point, we haven't had a deep learning session around the curriculum master plan, and really we're drafting a new plan than what you guys saw last year, so it will be quite different.
So we really appreciate, the union really appreciates being pulled into the loop on this, and I think that it helps in the overall process because when we get questions from teachers, the first thing they always say is, well, you know, there's this, this, and this going on. Didn't you know about that? And if I say, oh, no, I don't know about that, then the alarm goes up. So it's good just to keep us in the loop on that level. The first time I think that we kind of had input into this was the last spring. Anne and Jennifer came to a union meeting at Mission Hill. I think it was in May last year. And we looked at the draft curriculum map that they had then, and we gave the feedback that it was too much too fast. This year, we began, Helene and I met with Julie and Marianne, and then I just met with them again, and they were very kind to say that, you know, they would keep us, you know, in the process, and what we really want is not necessarily for Matt, Helene, and I to be approving of the plan. We just want teachers to have a voice in the plan, and then we want the teachers that do have a voice to know what their role is in terms of being a liaison with their site. Because what we were talking about in the beginning of the year, Julie was brand new. We had some brand new skill leaders. She asked some skill leaders for input at their site. It was the beginning of the year. They didn't know what their role was, so they kind of answered on what they knew. And then later we both heard from teachers saying, well, no one asked us about what was going on.
And then we went back to Skilliers, and they were like, well, we didn't really know what we were supposed to do. So we talked about how important it is every time that they have these meetings, and we'll reinforce that, too, to say, when you take this back, talk to people, come back and tell us. Because you're not there representing yourself. You're there representing your grade level or your department or your school site. So that was what was most important to us. And then we said, if there was anything that would affect working conditions, if we were starting to talk about something that was going to require extra work, extra meetings, you know, something around pay, then that would be where the actual, you know, union leadership team needed to be in the loop in terms of decision making. But we're very comfortable with, you know, checking in and learning about the process, and just making sure that our teachers are involved. And I was able to attend the full day of the first MTSS, and this week I had too many other things going on, so I could just come in the end. But teachers were really engaged in the work. And what Julie and Marianne shared about the initiatives, I'm hearing that at all the sites, just in regards to the issues we're having right now with negotiations, that teachers are saying, there's so many initiatives. You know, if we didn't have to do so many things and could focus on some concrete, you know, plans, we think that it would be better. We just feel overwhelmed. And we saw that on that day. I mean, their exercise that they did was so good. They had big white pieces of paper with stickies, colored stickies. You had to put all the initiatives you had at your school. And I remember Chris saying, like, this is great. There are all these initiatives. But there's so many things. You know, how can you do all of that? So I know teachers are really appreciating that you're looking at that and, you know, going to try to focus in on what's most effective. So we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there
one final thought is, our last presentation was on visible learning, and we talked about teacher efficacy, and it really is teachers that are doing this work, and we can't overwhelm our teachers with everything all the time. So this is really, we can't move forward alone, so we really appreciate your leadership and your input as well. We can't do it without advocacy. Thank you.
Okay, Sheila?
I just want to make, I guess it's kind of a personal request, and if you think I'm out of my mind and, you know, it has no relevance to you, that's okay. But I was thinking about this as I was looking at it and seeing the timeline and where it was taking us, and I was thinking that if there's a place in the process where, and I'm talking about maybe a couple of sentences in a couple of different places, where as far as I'm concerned as a board member, and I don't know if the rest of the board agrees, I would like to have a little bit of a chance to see what happened, not everything that happened in those meetings, but you got it down to five things. Okay, that's fine. I'm happy with that. I don't need to know why, because they make sense to me. But that we had a curriculum, and the curriculum is changing now. And it seems to me that it might be helpful to the board to have some sense as to what happened in the teacher meetings that led people to say, this is the kind of change we need, even if it's just a small bit. Because I find after doing this now, I think it's 6 years, you know, and having worked in the schools before that, things come along and you just kind of get swept up in it. And it's helpful, I think, as board members to have a sense of, oh, so we're moving in this direction because we found out this worked for some things but not for others. And so we have chosen this because it really seems to address these three things that we think are most important. Does that make sense? So I'm not asking you guys to do a lot of work, but I think you already probably know it. And maybe when it comes around to us getting the results, it would be helpful for us to have some context to them, so that we know, okay, we're going into this curriculum to the future,
like
because
we're making changes to curriculum or instruction.
How did you come up with this? Mm-hmm. So because from our point of view, we're outside of all of this, and it's, for me, it's hard because I'm outside of it, and I'm thinking, oh, this sounds like a whole lot of interesting stuff's going on. And just in terms of me feeling comfortable that I'm going to support, you know, all the financial things we're going to have to do to support this, mm-hmm. it would be helpful. Does that, if that makes sense, that's just, and you can throw it out if it's like too much work.
No, it makes perfect sense, and I would say in regards to curriculum, one of the major reasons we need to do curriculum adoptions and PD is because of the Common Core standards, and that we have not transitioned yet in many instances. And then we have NGSS that just came out, so we're going to be transitioning. We don't have any, we have some NGSS aligned materials, but we have not done an adoption yet, so that's not even in that like priced out plan that you saw as one of at that table at the end of the board cover. So that's not in there. History social science framework just came out at the beginning of this school year. We need to do a history social science framework or textbook adoption. That's not priced out in here, so we're going to need to be doing that. And professional development just started this year to get teachers kind of up to speed with the new framework. So a lot of it is actually being driven by the state in a way, because we have all of these new standards, and we're behind. Just going to be honest, we're behind in math and English language arts in terms of like getting an adoption and shifting instruction. We haven't done it systematically yet.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Jeremy, you're next.
Yeah, noting that although you have $15,000 set aside for social science or history, 2017-18, there's nothing budgeted for it for 18-19, and I'm wondering why. It's the last new history social studies framework, PD, two PD days per teacher, $15,000 for 17-18, but nothing for 18-19.
The only reason is everything that's in here for professional development are professional developments that are already, we know are going to happen and are in existence, and that money needs to be there so that we can send teachers. We don't know about history social science. I personally do not know about history social science trainings happening next year yet, so we don't have that money set aside. It's not that it's not important. And we're also trying to be conservative with our PD and curriculum needs because we know we have a tight budget, and so we have it there, and we have many other needs that as soon as money becomes available, we will be putting good use to it.
But you imagine spending some money in 18-19 on...
We would like to, but at this time we don't have, and you'll notice we don't have funding sources for a lot of the things that actually we are in trainings that we know about that are happening, and we're waiting for the second interim numbers to come out so that...
So we're going to build those into the second interim, but for social, we need to strategically align our resources to the adoptions that we're doing right now. And there aren't materials yet to be adopted for social studies. We may talk to social studies teachers at the framework time in the spring and find out that maybe our high school teachers don't want to do a formal textbook adoption but would rather do an alignment, a curriculum alignment work to the standards using open source resources, in which case we'd look at budgeting some time for teachers to come together to do that work. But that's part of what's going to evolve as they build the plan into next school year.
Might I make a recommendation that you contact PAHRO, because they seem to be well ahead in terms of planning for history social studies framework. They're already looking at textbooks and stuff like that. So
the COE is going to be hosting a textbook fair, so we have all that info out. It's textbooks right now for the, that are aligned to the framework are only K-8. They don't have any high school ones, but we do plan on attending that to look at materials. And it's something you'll be personally excited about, Jeremy, is that we're working with someone from UCSC to try to get the history project, the National History Project, here in Santa Cruz so that our history teachers will have local professional development. The closest history area project is Berkeley right now.
I know that Daisy and George work on that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're in full support of that.
Okay.
All right, so, like, no other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, now the district goals and metrics.
Ask Julia and Marianne to stay up here and talk to you. This is the second reading of the revision to the district metrics to monitor our progress and our work. And we presented first time at our study session on the 31st, and based on your input, a revision was made. And I'll let these two speak to that.
Yes, so we know you had a board study session on this. The main revision to the draft metrics that you saw two weeks ago, is to goal number two. I know there is a suggestion about trying to monitor the percentage of students that are involved in clubs, athletics, or other voluntary school programs to help measure school connectedness. This is something we try to do, and we're going to try to do it as best we can, but it is quite difficult to track, only in the sense that club attendance is spotty. Like, they don't necessarily take great attendance. Most of our clubs on campus are run and operated by students, so they do the best they can, but they don't, like, have a... they're not taking attendance like teachers do in Illuminate and that sort of thing, so we have to go off of, like, paper attendance sheets. So we're going to get rosters as best we can from our athletic directors for all athletic teams, and we'll also get rosters for clubs. And I know we still need to talk about more what all would be entailed with voluntary school programs, because I know there's arguments to be made that kids that participate in band, in Avid, those are great school community building groups on campus, that yes, it is a dedicated period of your day, but there are many things that happen outside of the school day in regards to some of those activities too. So we're going to be, maybe we'll bring you two sets of data, one without the band or classes that are actual classes, and then one with.
What about theater, drama?
Oh, yeah, theater, drama, all those sorts of classes we need to go through. And then you start, and then you're like, well, what about CTE classes? When you walk into those classes, those kids are in there during lunch after school, working on their school newspapers or other projects. So we have a lot of great programs at our schools, and it's amazing that they're actual class periods that kids can participate in. So we would love your feedback regarding, like, how much you want to see in that number or what you don't, where you want that line to be drawn.
Cindy?
Thanks. This is a little bit of a thinking out loud question, but going back to your prior item on the curriculum master plan, we had listed there school connectedness as one of four major curriculum areas, if you will, and now we're seeing school connectedness appropriately here as a measure in goal number two. So can you sort of link those two for me? If it's one of the major four areas that was chosen, and yet it's hard to maybe define, let yet alone measure, can you help me sort of bridge the gap? Are we talking about the same thing there? Or
yeah, I think we very much are. I think when choosing metrics and choosing any kind of data, it's very important that we are narrow enough to be able to, that we have measurable data from year to year. And so that's, I think, what the voluntary programs, if we want to see growth over time, our last set of metrics were in place for many years, and we want to see that steady growth. So that's the hesitation on that. As far as school connectedness, we get this data. The first questions on here are from our California Healthy Kids survey that we give every other year. So okay. We don't do that every year, but we do it every other year. And it's a very well-vetted survey, and there's a combination of questions, and I apologize, I don't have the exact questions, but they have grouped those together, that these questions are indicative of a student's sense of school connectedness. and they look at and they disaggregate those questions by subgroup, by grouping like that for those questions. It is a confidential survey. So it would it's very important that we get that data disaggregated like that by those groupings and rely on their expertise. It's hard because these are questions that are very personal when the child takes them as well. As far as the other big component of school connectedness, we have a couple other, of course, suspension rates, chronic absenteeism. This is data that we collect all the time. We do attendance every day. And so we can really connect that, and that's easy to disaggregate also by subgroup, because we have very different results for different groups, and that's where we really need to focus our energy. The last piece of data that we're going to be measuring in school connectedness is the number of students that leave our schools for alternate settings. So numbers that, students leaving Santa Cruz City Schools for private charter schools, for dropping out, other kinds of programs that are outside of our district. I think that's those three metrics we felt are really indicative of school connectedness. And when you do that, you disaggregate the data by ethnicity, by subgroup, you do get different results. So we really do need to pay attention to that.
Thanks.
Okay, Patty's next.
Somewhat two-part, just thinking about what you said and disaggregating some of that information. Do we ever compare it to other districts? I know that teenagers at a certain point are teenagers. They have minds of their own, and we adults would love to see them in the school system we like or see best. But so perhaps some sort of district near or just age group nationally in California, maybe just in the community or county, to have a comparison would be helpful. I also hear us talk about the California Healthy Kids Survey and how the students do that. But if I remember correctly, looking at the survey, isn't there a component for parents to weigh in also? And I'm thinking about this in a larger goal along with our LCAP. Sometimes we, or when I say we, I'm speaking in the district terms, see the education that we'd like to apply. Of course, parents know their children. Or how much they know their children by high school is also can be debated. But how that can play into it, because it may open avenues to see where something that I personally assume happens at all homes, because that's the type of home I have, is not or isn't serving the need that would keep more students feeling connected. So, when we disaggregate to such a small form, sometimes I think it's a problem. But I'd also like to see us, and I mentioned this, you were not at the at the study session, is that to really get with the kids, and not with them in the classroom setting, but I think one of the most eye-opening pieces was to go to Saturday school and do something outside of, the forced homework and say, hey, do you want to do something on your campus? What means something to you on your campus? The students really open up. They're very truthful. Kids are truthful. And they really help me to understand, some of them, school is never going to be their place for lots of different reasons. So I want to know that in the curve. Because I always want to get 100, but that doesn't mean that 100% are going to participate. So.
Yeah, good suggestion.
And yes, there is a component of the Healthy Kids Survey that's a parent component, but we have to pay an additional fee for that.
Well, when you say that, is it such an additional fee that it wouldn't be worthy of it? Because wouldn't we want input from all stakeholders, especially the parents?
So what we've done is we've included some questions in our district parent survey that work at getting at student connectedness and parent opinions around that, in lieu of, which is a survey that we administer, in lieu of using the West End survey, which adds a great deal of additional cost to administer through them.
What does great deal mean?
I don't remember off the top of my head.
It's a couple dollars, $2-$3 per student, but if you're going to be doing it every year times 7,000 students, it adds up significantly.
Sheila?
Well, this kind of goes along with what Patty said, too. I think listening to you worrying about whether you're getting enough data, from my point of view, one of the things we were asking, I'm fine with having the Healthy Kids survey and the things that we know now, but the question is, what are we missing? And that, I think, has to do with stretching our idea of what school connectedness is. So, like Patty said, I was interested in the idea of seeing Saturday school. But also, one of the things I brought up was the hundreds of kids that went out for soccer and didn't get on the team, because you only got on the team if you were on the breakers, so they didn't have a way in to that which seemed like the natural thing to them. And so my thinking was, what are the things like that that we may not be seeing have to do with school connectedness, because they're not band and they're not football and they're not cheerleaders, they're not the things that we always think of. So when we talked about it, I felt like several of us were trying to sort of stretch the idea so that we'd see that we got everybody. And I also have had the experience, actually a fair amount in the last year, of the students who are, as Patty said, the ones that maybe school is never going to be a place of comfort, who for learning disability reasons or mental health reasons are holding on. I mean, if you want to measure their school connection, they're still coming. They're the ones that are going to show up on the, it's getting better with them showing up. But they don't feel, I've had kids tell me, they keep talking about how we have to be connected or we won't do well in school. And I'm not connected, but I'm coming. Does that mean I'm not going to do well in school? Does that mean I'm not going to be able to go to college? I mean, these are the anxieties that I'm hearing. And so the question is, how can we define that too, so that they feel it, so that they know that what they're doing in order to stay connected is working? So for me, I'm not going to say to you, spend tons and tons of time trying to figure out exactly how many kids go to journalism. What you can do and what you can hand us, I'm going to be satisfied with. But I would like us to also stretch our thinking to see if we're missing things. If we're going to really be pushing for school connectedness, then are we giving all the kids a chance to feel as if the way they choose to be connected is being reflected in that, and that they're going to be able to do it? Does that make sense?
It does. And I want to remind the board that the school safety plans have two goal components. One is the social-emotional goal, and most of our schools have it related to school connectedness, or many of them do, as I'm reading through their safety plans, have it in regards to school connectedness, and they're collecting their own school data and doing their own things at their school campus to get a real sense of how many kids do we have that are connected, what can we do to reach those students that aren't connected. There are a lot of examples out there what different principals are doing.
Yeah. Thank you. Dee Dee.
So just responding to what you just said, I mean, there's a source of data potentially that we could potentially tap into.
Right.
I appreciate what Patty said about comparing ourselves to other districts, but I'm more interested also in looking within our own district and thinking about the different types of programs that we have to offer. And we have many, as you said, many wonderful rich enrichment programs, the types of programs. But I'm particularly interested in, among our population of students, who is participating, and more importantly, who is not. Because I'm wondering if those that are participating reflects our population of students, or is it a specific subsample? Mm-hmm. So that's what I really want to dig down deep into. And those opportunities that Sheila was referring to, I think, are there. I mean, Patty and I have been going to the athletics meetings, and they're saying they want to build freshman teams because they have so many students that they can't fit them all into a JV and a varsity. So there's an opportunity maybe that we could incorporate more players if we could rethink our resources to accommodate an additional team. for different sports that are more popular. So I think there's opportunities, and if we know the data, if we know what the data is telling us, where the interest is among students, and then how we can shift our resources to provide opportunities to meet those interests.
Thank you. Well, the recommendation is to approve the revised goals and metrics.
We got off, didn't we? I move approval.
Second.
Okay. Student recommendation?
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next item is the enrollment projection.
So we're just giving a couple slides tonight. This is the data from Decision Insight, which we've used now for the past 2 years. And they've been a forecast for the next several years. Just as a reminder, the forecast that this team has done for you for the past 2 years, their conservative projections have been within 1% of our actual enrollment. So we'll see if that trend continues with them, but that's what they're doing. So we'll continue to partner with them to share information with us. It helps us with staffing, helps with budgeting, et cetera, incorporating this and also looking at bond projects. Initial study reflects current SCCS data, computer district data, and plans. This has plans for new housing they incorporate into their information. What Decision Insights enrollment data doesn't have built into it are enrollment forecasts for the ARC program we have and for AFE. They talk about why, because the numbers are small and the change is small, so those numbers are not included in the data that you see in front of you. We gave you the snapshot again early in the year. We talked about seabeds, where our seabeds numbers look like, and this, again, just kind of a recap point of where we're at today by school and totals by school. And in the next two slides, what we provided to you is data, the modern projections that Decision Insight has generated for you, and then a slide that shows their conservative projections. And if any of you are interested in getting this broken down by school, look at elementary, look at secondary, we can divide this into as much different ways as we like to see it. We're sharing this information, we're meeting with principals about what their forecasts look like. You'll note here in the conservative slide where it shows we're going from a total of 6409 in 2017 to a 2027 number of 5401. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's the number we've been talking about for some time. Their modern projections show a change of 6409 to 5981. So as we walk down the path year over year, we're going to be monitoring this information and see what the actual trends look like. They will weave those into their forecasts and updates for us. We'll include that in our budgeting information, and when we talk about staffing, we'll incorporate that into our staffing projections as well. Jeremy.
Yeah, you say that they're within 1% on their conservative estimates. So we're roughing it out, 6,000 students. So they've been within 60 students of their projections. And yet they're conservative to their moderate projections. There's a discrepancy of what's called 600, so 10%. I'm not quite understanding why they're giving you such a wide range.
Well, what I understand, Jeremy, is in the past 2 years they've given that same, they have given us both those moderate and conservative estimates. And right. Some of it has to do with what they anticipate, what might be generated from housing stock, what might be generated if we see a continued trend in the kindergarten enrollment, if that is a linear, whether they average that out.
No, I'm telling you, I get it. It just they just widen. I understand.
And that's why I see that
it's smaller in the years, closer to us, and it gets wider and wider. I get that. Okay, my bad.
That's right.
Small changes over time add up to large changes. But you say, just to reiterate, they have been within 1% of the conservative projection.
That's correct.
Yeah. Wow.
And that, what I also said too, Jeremy, is I said, as we walk down the path, we don't know what's going to happen with the economy, what's going to happen. We're talking about more of the budget part too. We'll see as the years unfold. We'll see what this next year's trend does, what the kindergarten class looks like. We'll just kind of walk down the path.
Because your moderate has us at 14 more.
14 more.
An additional 14. Yeah. We go from 63.66 to 63.80 on the moderate, and we go from 63.66 to 62.97 on the conservative. So, yeah. It's interesting.
Did you have a question?
No. Pretty much answered.
Okay. Any questions?
Just one. So we have it under, so we can go backwards and read data and show that the 18 shows us in the conservative at 63.39. And then our seabeds, are we, if I am to read this correctly, in our 17-18 October at 66, about 300 over, comparatively without including the 112 through our ARC and...
So we have
presented normally our CBEDs in this format by grade breakdown in school, and then of course the projection formats come, and so I'm looking at just thinking the basis of the number for the conservative projections isn't actually starting from where we are according to our data of the October CBEDs by about 300 students. No worries. I understand.
Is it all of the small schools that's not included, Pat? Is it Costa Nova, ARC, and AFE?
Yeah.
Because if Costa Nova, ARC, and AFE aren't included, that would account for that.
That would account for that.
Sure.
I know 300 doesn't sound like a large number, but really, as we are a smaller district or moving in that direction consistently.
So, I'm not sure if I get your exact question, Patty.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just looking at in terms of projections of the 6409 versus CBEDs at 6614. If I add the ARC and the AFE, it's 189 students. So if I subtract 189 from 6614, I'm at 6425.
Okay, so it's a difference.
Versus
16 students, yeah. Okay. I see. So, yes, because it wasn't in this format, I wasn't sure that this was reflecting the same numbers. Thank you for the math.
And I did ask if they could add this data they provide to us in their projections. They could add the ARC and the AFE, and they said they don't do that.
Okay.
Because I was thrown by initial chips.
They don't consider that measurable.
That's right.
Okay.
Understandable.
It's not the right direction, but it is what it is. We'll deal with it.
And that's what you've seen in the past couple of years. So, again, we walk down a path, we'll incorporate this information to our plan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
you. Any questions?
Informational, so thank you.
Thank you.
And our next item is the governor's budget proposal.
I'll talk to this at a high level for it. I know a lot of you sat through the presentations, capital advisors, overall positive information for us. Positive in terms of money coming our way. The governor's budget presentation had kind of a high-level 20,000-foot view. There's some concerns and some speculation about things that we're going to continue to focus in on. And then some ongoing things that aren't funded and ongoing caution and suggestions that they give us, which are incorporated in the slide you see here. 20,000-foot view of the budget. The LCF has this fully funded in 18-19, 2 years ahead of schedule. So that's some significant money that we're seeing sooner rather than later. There is a substantial amount of one-time money coming our way to the tune of about $300 per ADA. So us back the envelope number, about $2 million. I said something that I should stop saying back the envelope because we're getting older. So that's a rough number for us. We have, you heard Julie and Mary Ann talk about it in case study. We have tremendous needs in the district, so we'll have a discussion about what we can do with that. So, and again, the gap funding has been eliminated, some positive funding coming our way. Those are the two most significant things, funding sources we're looking at. There is concern about what the new tax reform is going to mean to us, particularly for basic aid districts, but we'll wait and see how that unfolds too, right? Hopefully the economy is stimulated by the change, and the write-offs that people can take on their property taxes don't necessarily drive property values down. That's something we need to be constantly monitoring for our basic aid district on the elementary side. There is incorporated in here as well, too, commentary regarding NAFTA, what the final NAFTA ring is going to be, what do you think that could have to the overall economy. There's commentary in here as well, too, about some of the ongoing needs for special education and the funding needs that we have for special education, and that there isn't significant improvement in that funding. There's increased needs and really insufficient funding, is how it's kind of portrayed. And then there's commentary towards the tail end of these slides, too, that talk about what we always have to be mindful of. We're looking at step and column increases. We're looking at the statutory benefit increases for STIRS and PERS, and that ongoing increase we're seeing for those items, too, is a bit of a change because the PERS rates came in a little bit higher than they thought they were going to be. But it's an ongoing caution to districts that they look at this information in their multi-year projections, in their planning as well, too. A lot of districts in their third year out were looking at qualified statements. Mm-hmm. A significant portion of districts in the state of California were looking at qualified financials. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is what's woven into these slides. I won't walk through all the details here. That's really the big picture slides, and you probably have seen a lot of slides already. This is, I think we picked 8 out of 150 or something like that. So,
narrowed it a little.
Yeah. So I kind of narrated a lot about this in the first section, and you can read through it. U.S. economic outlook, and it talks about increasing rates, interest rates, housing prices keep going up, rates still remain below historic levels, stock market has reached an all-time high, lots of speculation about the stock market, when are we going to see a recession again, what's that impact going to be to funding? Unemployment continues to drop, wages are rising, but again, it says there are risks associated with political ones that relate to the NAFTA negotiations and the general slowing economy. Growth through labor shortages. And this last blow in here, we heard several times, you've probably heard too, that sunny 2018 with clouds in 2019.
Yeah.
So it's a question. This, the fully funded LCFF, the one-time discretionary fund, there's some other peripheral things in here too, which we can spend a little more time on in future time as we can kind of analyze a little more detail. Commentary about COEs, special ed local plan, areas to work with COEs, provide LAs with technical assistance to improve student outcomes as part of statewide system support. I know Chris is focusing on that. COEs, there's cost of living adjustment information being issued for COEs. This is a one-time versus ongoing revenues recap, which I spoke to. And some significant dollars coming our way in one-time money. So we'll see how we move forward with that. This slide talks about what's not in the education budget. Increasing the LCFF base grant target to reach the funding level of the top 10 states. Growing bulk obligations for STIRS and PERS, homeschool transportation programs, and increasing equalizing the Senate Bill 602, 8602 base funds for special education. Right? So we'd like to see that happen too. Okay, LCFF, this is a recap of the LCFF, the elimination of our gap. LCF base grant targets are adjusted for the estimated 2.51% COLA in 18-19. And 2018-19, LCFF growth provides for an average increase, and it varies by every district just about, but in per pupil funding, estimated $550 per ABA. And individual results were varied, right? This is a recap of one-time discretionary funds, but approximately $295 per ABA. And that's substantial for us. Special ed, again, this is the governor's proposed modest one-time and ongoing funding for special education programs, including the COLA, one-time funding establishment programs to increase and retain special education teachers, $167.2 million, of which $125 million is ongoing to establish an inclusive education expansion program focused on increasing ability programs for low-income children, age 0 to 5, including children with disabilities. And then no funding is proposed to increase and equalize 8602. Okay?
I think, did they sit with the, this is a slide, that increase that about 60% of the total cost is coming from districts' general funds now?
because of what's coming from the federal government. I'm just this morning I was just reading that the president's proposal is no increase to IDEA funding for this year.
These slides are showing the CalPERS and CalSTRS rate increases, which we're mindful of. We've got incorporated into the multi-year projections for us to the ongoing increase that we're currently experiencing. And again, this last slide is kind of good news and challenges. Higher than anticipated funding 18-19. The catch-up increases Prop 98 for prior years, significant one-time unrestricted dollars. And the next section talks about future increases flatten out well below projected cost increases. In a 2 to 3% coal environment, STIRS and PERS, seven column health and welfare increases more than the new revenues. Right? So we're still seeing substantial increases. Districts, particularly those with high unduplicated counts, will miss the additional revenue increase as the state now reaches the LCFF targets. Those are now woven into your LCFF. And then NYPs will likely show continued deficits in the third year for most districts, particularly those with declining enrollment. As we look at our declining enrollment, we're factoring in, we know there will be decreased costs associated with declining enrollment, but it's something we have to be vigilantly monitoring. Okay? And the, I think the last one is the last one. As usual, our volatile state caution is the order of the day. Okay, I'm sure you've all received a lot of information from CSBA, but that's just kind of a really quick recap for you about the budget. Any questions? Sheila?
I think Cindy was first.
Oh, I'm sorry, Cindy. So sorry.
That's okay. So in our multi-year projections, these increased PERS and STIRS percentages that we see in the school services report, are those identical to the percentages that we'll build into our multi-year projections?
Yeah, they will be identical.
Okay. Because those are stunning increases that we have to contend with, obviously. Thank you.
I'm just wondering if because you come at this with a history and an understanding, as you're getting this information, do you have a sense that volatile is putting it mildly in terms of the way in which our president is pushing everything back to the states, and the states are pushing it back to the counties, or do you feel kind of confident that we're going to be able to predict and ride this out?
Well, I would tell you, so that I'm absolutely confident we'll write out whatever the situation is. But I think that, you know, the governor's new tax reform, there's a lot of questions as to what that impact is going to be. I do think as well, too, I mean, I've been hopeful that some of the PERS and STIRS, because the stock market's been doing so well, there might be some relief that we see in that. The governor has been very, very conservative and has built this rainy day fund. For the state, I'd like to think there's some relief in the PERS and STIRS contributions, and I think I would speculate that the slide that speaks to the majority of districts 3 years out are presented as real challenge. The STIRS and PERS rates are a significant part of that challenge, and so I'd like to be optimistic, but think that, you know, that we'll see some relief on that front. But over 20 years, we've seen a lot of different ebbs and flows. We'll plan, we'll partner, and we'll work together to make it work, whatever we make work.
Okay.
Hey.
Dee's next. Keep calm, Carrie. Go ahead, Dee.
It's hard to keep calm these days.
So I have a question about the one-time discretionary funds for districts. And thinking in the context of our master curriculum plan, might there be a possibility that those two worlds could come together in harmony and those discretionary funds could be used towards the cost of implementing Common Core yet to come? Is that what the governor's thinking, or
well,
do you have any indicators of that?
The one-time money is really discretionary.
So we could do with it what we would.
That's right. So, And again, we have a variety of different needs. So could a portion of that be committed to professional development to fund our curriculum master plan, to fund technology needs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah.
I think it's all of the above. So it's all, Since it's purely discretionary.
Well, and it's one-time dollars that, you know, we can't put necessarily towards salary because it's one-time dollars. So if we could use it strategically to augment these special things that we know need to happen.
Can you talk to me what school services had to say about CTE and how districts will be taking it on and where the governor stands from your perspective of what was said in your pieces?
There was a couple slides kind of spoke to CTE, and you may recall from Jeff Powell speaking about it. I didn't bring that exact slide, but
they're keeping the competitive grants. So I think there's still support, but it was unclear. This whole CTIC process has been unclear and changing all the time, that it's been tough to know exactly what's going to come. The county's been really great partners in helping us secure the dollars when they're available, but it's been competitive. I'd really love to see it not be competitive and be something that they give to all districts, because all of our districts need CTE monies.
Is there any talk of it, though, because it hasn't landed in the junior college programs or in the K-12? I think you as I understand it, left it out there, and I'm asking these questions just so that everybody can keep it on their mind. As we spoke of curriculum, this will be a curriculum need depending on where it lands. You know, obviously there's no crystal ball, and we've not been given anything definitive, but we do... Or at this point, we have had CTE programs. We have taken them over through our own district. So I'm just looking for other than the parcel tax pieces to plan accordingly for.
I like to think that there would be a dedicated source for that kind of. I mean, if you think about really at a national level too, when we look at CTE funding and support for that. And the real need for it, need for options, whether we talk about kids doing AG, whether they're ready for post-secondary, whether it's straight to work or onto college or community college, whatever the case is, the funding of that, I think it's really critical. So
I know it's very grave, so I just wanted to make sure.
So if we hadn't passed our parcel taxes, we think that we have $1.4 million in CTE programs that we would have had to figure out what to do with in our general fund. Mm-hmm. So we might be one of those districts that's 3 years out in the qualified, or we'd be looking at cutting programs, probably both CTE and other programs, to keep CTE going. And because we've had the generous support of our community, we haven't had to make that choice.
I think that I was encouraged by what's happening at the state level in terms of special ed, even though at the federal level it's not good news. I was particularly intrigued by the increased funds for the Inclusive Education Expansion Program, and I was just wondering, are there ways that our district can leverage those kinds of funds?
I don't think it ends up going to the K-12s. I know that STELPA is going to be expanding preschool services because we have more more preschool eligible students. But I don't think any of those dollars, they're not going to go into the AB 602 model, which is what pays for that in the STELPA. So it's just, I'm not sure exactly how we would. I don't believe we get to access it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Comments
from
the public?
Robert Chuck, I want to thank the district for including me on the field trip to see this presentation. One thing that was left out this slide you didn't mention, which I found rather entertaining, was a constant discussion about marijuana and the possibility of whether marijuana tax is going to break. And I was reminded of the last CFT event I went to. Santa Cruz seems to hold the record about 14 distribution stores, more than our friends in Berkeley. So I foresee, you know, if you look any of the news from Colorado, Oregon, and Washington, you're going to see money coming. Mm-hmm. A good chunk of money. My counterparts in Colorado told me they're flush with cash, more than they thought they would. Mm-hmm. So I think you should, you know, as they kept saying at the meeting, I don't know, maybe we're not stoned enough, but Steelers,
the
state
board is nice job.
All right, well, this was informational, and our next item is the resolution 11-17-18, Santa Cruz High School Bill Doyle the Memorial Scholarship.
So, if you'd like, I can read it to the record, but it's a recommendation to approve this resolution 11-17-18, establishing the Bill Doyle the Memorial Scholarship at Santa Cruz High School. If it's your preference, I can do the record, but if not, that's fine. I don't.
Doesn't look like we need to read it.
Approval.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second.
Okay. Coming to the public. Student recommendation.
Aye.
It's a roll call, so.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
I just want to make a comment and thank those. One thing, Santa Cruz High School, being quite over 100 and some odd years old, has quite a legacy of people who contribute, and I'm very, very thankful. I'm thankful to all of the community, as they do, but it really does shine that way. So, you know, thank you. And thank you for bringing that forward.
Dee Dee, your light's on.
Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
All right, the next item is from the consent agenda. It's 8.1.3.
So that's pretty sort of good to vote, yes?
Yes.
Right. Righty, right.
Be right.
Signs
should be installed next Friday.
What will they look like?
I can forward to you the renderings.
How large are we talking? 4x8?
4x8, Charlie?
Yes.
4x8.
I'm sorry, for the record, what kind of signs are you talking about?
The bond
project.
The bond project.
And they'll be at each site. And
that's correct.
Will they be mounted somewhere nice?
They will.
Okay, so that's a $45,000 to, I think it's well spent. I think that's great. And they'll be weatherproof and all that good stuff.
It's less
be nice.
Than that.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
less than that,
$9,800.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah. Yes,
it's under $45,000.
It's $10,000, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you making a motion to pass that item?
Oh, sure. So move.
Second.
Okay, roll call, students.
Aye.
Okay,
our next item from the consent agenda is 8.1.13.8.
Right. Please allow me.
This is fairway painting?
I'm sorry?
This is fairway painting?
No.
No.
That's
the field turf.
This is 13.8.
Okay, well, let's keep them in order. 13.4
okay.
Should come first.
Is that one pool?
Yes, Patty.
Yeah,
Patty.
Oh, okay. I had it there. Okay. Sorry.
So it is the agreement for the Santa Cruz High Gymnasium interior repainting project. And there were two things that came to mind when I read this. First of all, I was impressed with the contract that the contractor that you brought forward for painting provided, so I'm happy to do that. But when you have what's called a maintenance project, it says the current maintenance project threshold for public contract code is $90,200. Projects that fall under that, under the maintenance threshold, are not required to be bid. So on December 1st of 17, the district sought proposals from two qualified and experienced contractors by direct invitation for this project. And I know that you were kind enough to answer this question before, that you take them from a qualified pool. Do we only have two in the qualified pool in painters?
Trevor, you want to speak to
the painting piece?
Because you mentioned that.
I can't answer that specifically. I don't have that information at hand.
And the only reason I ask is because those bids came in $10,000 over the architect's thought. And $90,000 times 10 schools for projects for me is a bit expensive. Good painters are hard to come by, so if you have a good relationship and they consistently give the better price, that's great. But if the pool is larger, then I believe that we would have more of a competitive bidding process. It may not be possible due to there might only be two qualified. So I wanted to ask the question out loud. And then the other piece to this for me personally is that I know that painting projects happen in the summer, which is wonderful, and that this was driven in part by what the site had to see. But does it address, because we haven't been brought the plan for the gymnasium, what the problem that the community talked about in the gymnasium to be? Is that the entrance to the gymnasium is back behind the trash cans, down a hill that I slid down to get into to get there. And the front, where the doors are, open directly on, if you were to come in, the basketball floor. So if we're going to be spending this money on painting, are we going to be addressing the problem of the entrance, too? And is it just walls and not floor that's being painted?
Currently, right now, it's just walls, not floor. And we are still working with the site administration and athletic director and coaches on what that new entry process is going to look like.
Okay, thank you. So with knowing that, move approval.
Second.
Sheila? Mm.
Thank you. Okay. Student recommendation?
Aye.
Roll call?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, now we have item 8.1.13.8.
Yes, ma'am. This would be the field. It's $1 million expense. I guess I'd ask Trevor just to give us, as we're spending $1 million right here, if you could just give us the 30-second overview. Are we using the same materials that we used on the Santa Cruz High School field? Are you confident that this is the right stuff? That sort of thing.
Absolutely. We're actually using the exact same vendor and same process we used at Santa Cruz High, same materials. This particular bid also, CMAS contract also includes the rubberized all-weather track surface. So it's like a one-stop shop. But yes, the process is the same, the materials are the same. We're looking forward to as many happy people at Harvard as we have at Santa Cruz High.
And last follow-up question, are we expecting this field to be ready for fall 2018?
As I've explained to our contractor partners, there are no exceptions to the rule. It must be ready to play on for the 50th anniversary. No excuses.
For the 50th anniversary.
Which is, right, I think that's their first or second game for the new season in 2018-19.
Thank you. That's it.
Patty?
So, Mr. Miller, with that being said, does that mean that DSA has approved those plans for it and it can move forward?
The field portion, we separated out the controversial issues with the light poles, and so we have an approval on the field itself, so we can start as soon as we get a contract, which hopefully I'll be bringing to you shortly. And then also the snack bar restroom and pull down is a separate thing due to some DSA issues.
And do you foresee that to be prior to the end of the school year, or will it be an all-summer project?
The plan is to start work immediately and have it done for that 50th show.
Can I just if the board doesn't mind, I just want to introduce the gentleman to the back here. This is Chris Garcia. Some of you may know Chris. Chris worked on the bond for us. So,
welcome.
This is a face with a name. He's been working on the bond.
Thank you for being here.
I move approval.
Thank you.
Okay, student.
And that was Deb and Deb and Dee. Thank you very much.
Students?
Aye.
Thank you. Our next item is
personnel actions certificated? Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's going to come after.
No.
Okay,
it's resolution 8-17-18, tie-breaking criteria.
This is an annual resolution that we bring to the board prior to what might be required as we do our staffing for the coming year.
Are there questions? Go ahead, Cindy.
I don't have any problem with the six criteria that are listed. It looks to me like it's been well thought out and conversations held with unions, I assume, right? Mm-hmm. I would just make a note that maybe for future rounds of this, maybe for next year, at least have a conversation about adding a criterion that includes some focus on evaluation, comparative evaluation of teachers. If all these other things are a tie, then maybe instead of choosing something by lot, there's a criterion that involves looking at consideration of evaluation results that, and there's a new evaluation process that we haven't seen yet or approved yet, but I assume it's meaty. And just something to consider that obviously we all want to avoid any layoffs at all, but if we have to do it, then these criterion can really be critical in terms of maintaining the absolute top people that we're looking to retain. So just to...
Well, definitely, we'll have conversations with our union team.
Absolutely.
And thinking about that for the coming year.
See what they think about that. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Questions or comments from the public?
Okay. Move approval.
Sheila moves approval.
Second.
Dee Dee seconds. And this is a resolution, so a student recommendation.
Aye.
Jeremy?
Aye.
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 And then sorry, another resident. Who was the first? Thank you. That's what I thought, but I wasn't.
Okay.
This, sorry.
Our next item is another resolution. 9-17-18, determination of K-12 district needs.
Again, this is an annual resolution that we have to give us the lens for looking at specific needs of the districts as we may be, if we have a reduction in staff, making sure that we provide for those needs.
Mm-hmm. There are questions or comments? Go ahead, Cindy.
Move for adoption.
Second.
Okay, and resolution, students?
Aye.
All right, our next item is governance, CSBA.
Actually, now we're going to be personnel.
Sorry,
okay.
Back to Jeremy.
Whoops. Right, okay, now we've got 8.1.1.
Right. So I just release of temporary employees. Mm-hmm. And we have this list, and these are all people who are on leave replacement.
Yes.
I guess the first question I have is when would the earliest possible date for them to be returned into the fold, so to speak, be?
Well, what we'll do is process the leave decisions that were made this evening, and those that aren't made yet will... So as soon as we have information, have those all processed, Desiree and Molly work to get information out to temporary teachers to get them back into positions as soon as we can.
Historically, though, it's been within, let's say, a month for many, or even sooner?
I'm going to defer to Desiree, because I could speak to what I believe it is, but she's going to know it better.
The previous 2 years, we were able to offer contracts to our temporary assistants. We
before spring break. That's going to be our goal for this year.
Okay. And I do have a second question. Are any of these dependent upon projected enrollments? And if so, are we using the conservative or the moderate projection? Or is this not connected in any way to that?
It is connected to enrollment.
That's
because reductions in staffing will impact how many positions we refill, and so we will not be bringing all of our temporary people back just by the nature of the fact that we will have fewer FTE next year for students.
So given that, what I would like to see in the future, and this could be either for a governance thing or just sort of a protocol, is we just have names here listed alphabetically from A to Z. It would be helpful to see these names by site and content area for me. Because if, in fact, the release of these temporary employees is more than just to satisfy the needs of the legal need that we have people on leave, and so we have to do this, but could possibly speak to declining enrollment, it would be helpful to see where that breaks down. Does that make sense? I think I'm being clear, but I'm not sure.
I understand what you're asking for.
Does that make sense? So in terms of, for example, you know, Ms. Adams, you know, history, Santa Cruz High School, et cetera, et cetera. And then we could, then the board would have a better, I would also, last thing, no, I'll save that question. Okay, thank you.
No other questions? Are you making a motion?
Can I ask Jeremy a question?
Sure.
So, Jeremy, how is it that the school, there's something I'm missing, the school and the person's name would tell you whether it was declining enrollment versus...
Well, I don't know exactly. I'm sort of fumbling in the dark here, but the point is that we are clearly in declining enrollment.
Yes, you want to separate
that. The conservative estimates are fairly steep declining enrollment, which means that there may be, from the Greater Santa Cruz Federation of Teachers, a reduction in, let's say, I'm making these numbers up, 4 or 5 or however many teachers from this year to next year, a reduction. And so they'll have to be, this will become more complicated in a sense. It's not just telling everybody who's on leave, we've got to give you this pink slip and we're going to have you back. So the board's going to need to have a sense of where the cuts are, at what grade levels, in what particular subject areas.
You wouldn't see that on this.
These are just terms.
These are, so it's fine for us to give you that information, but that's not going to be revealed by this.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But I'd like the information.
Right, because the pool is larger than this. That's helpful.
Well, and it may or may not be an area where we need to make a reduction. Mm-hmm. So we may have a temporary math teacher, but that may or may not be an area where we need to make a reduction based on our declining enrollment or what a particular need is. So it's...
I guess what I'm hoping is that we can...
And we're still in the process of determining that, meeting with school sites and identifying what the specific staffing needs are based on who's enrolled and what their needs are and what grade levels they're at and what courses they need to take and all those kinds of things right now. That's what they're busy working on right now.
Point taken, but it wouldn't hurt to have this by grade level or site or content area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Motion?
I move approval.
Second.
And the second one was hard? Thank you.
Okay, comment?
Aye.
Thank you. Next item is 8.1.2.
8.1.2.
identify yet, personnel actions.
Same as 8.1.1.
Just a point of clarification. I see under probationary new hires or temporary employees and regular pays, comma, Tricia, comma, project coordinator. Is that for the bond?
Yes.
6% bond.
What's that?
She's 60% bond. Yeah.
Okay. And so as the new bond, as one of the requests from various board members, including myself, have been to keep us apprised of who's being hired on the bond, I would, is this the only new bond hire so far? Or
Christopher Garcia.
And I guess that happened and was given to us last.
It's the same.
It's on here.
It's also on here.
Uh-huh. Just above.
There you go, Christopher Garcia, Christopher Construction Facility Project Manager. So those are the two.
And I also had this really nice color picture of the two of them in my weekly update.
Was yeah, I saw that too.
Do we, do we anticipate more hires in that area?
I think we need to walk down the path, Jeremy.
Say that again.
So we need to walk down the path.
We do
we're not riding on the back.
But I'm keeping my eyes open, and there may be rocks or pitfalls or waterfalls. So, okay. But we will walk down it. Sometimes we will skip.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Well, I should say welcome to, on my behalf, Tricia Hayes and Christopher Garcia. There you go.
Okay. Motion.
I move approval.
Second.
Thank you.
Aye.
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 Aye. Now 8.1.9.
Right. Electronic storage of records. I have two questions. One, we say that the fiscal impact is none, and yet I'm assuming that this is going to take hundreds, if not perhaps 1,000 hours or so. So how do we get a zero fiscal impact?
Sorry, I didn't catch that. There should have been a fiscal impact on that. It's because we have some college students that we've hired to do that, so there is a fiscal impact.
Okay.
And
an approximate number?
Desiree?
Yes, I'm college students, so they're doing this on a very part-time basis. I'd say 15 to 20 hours per week. And we have two students, and at our clerical assistant rate, which I think is about $11.30 an hour, and they're a little more than halfway through the scanning.
Oh. All right. So maybe thousands, but not tens of thousands of dollars.
No, we could get a number and bring it back. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
And then the other point is that we've talked a lot in various contexts about space. This should free up some space.
For HR, and we need to be able to do the same for our special ed records and at our school sites, our CUMs, our transcripts and medical records that we have to keep.
I know that one particular space is bottom floor Santa Cruz High School. So do you have a plan, or are you developing some sort of master plan of what will go into these spaces?
We're getting some estimates on what it would cost for us to digitize those records because we're running out of space to keep them, and some of the space that they're in is creating for mold and other problems. We're going to be bringing a plan back to the board soon for you to review.
Hey, Patty?
That was just my question, in hopes that the district would create a plan so that you can move forward. And I think the word nimble came so that, you know, as we're moving backwards, we move forward. And that way, all things can be just compartmentalized and put away in the 21st century, as opposed to what's happened. And not taking away from the students who have helped, but there are I, as one board member, would be more than happy to explore what it would cost and take and be behind having a professional service come and help out. Take that off your plate so that you can move forward in other directions, because that's, clutter and chaos.
We met with a firm last Friday.
Okay, good. So I look forward to that.
The other thing it would do would be it would create open spaces that could be utilized by other people in the school.
Humans.
Right.
Kids.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and it would not have our registrars digging around in boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Easier
yeah.
to
access.
Yeah,
I'm that friendly.
Is there a motion?
I move approval.
Second.
Thank you.
Students.
Aye.
And now we go to CSBA board policy updates. The final reading?
That's a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of them.
I have another big fat stack on my desk that I haven't gone through yet.
Okay.
They're just sitting there waiting for me.
Take your time.
No, she has a
permit
system
who
doesn't
want her to take her time.
Take your time.
She's
trying to get it fitting into my calendar, and it hasn't.
I'm like a double reader, so it's
So are there any questions? This is our recommendation that we move forward. These are mostly just legal adjustments and changes. Jeremy?
Change. 521 and 524, school-sponsored trips. This is a kind of, I wasn't sure what to make of this, so I have a question. Towards the bottom of the page, no field trip shall be authorized if any student would be excluded from participation because of a lack of sufficient funds.
Mm-hmm. That's a law.
Yeah.
The superintendent or designee shall coordinate with community groups to supply funds for students in need. Just talking about an exemplary teacher not in our district, Jeff Matlock takes, you know, let's say 150 kids from Scotts Valley Middle School every year through a close-up program to Washington, D.C. Now, I always assume that whether it's an eighth grade close-up field trip or a 10th grade Spanish teacher wanting to go to Spain or Mexico for 2 weeks, that those kinds of field trips, which could run into $2,000 or even $3,000 per student, were exempt from this.
Some of those aren't run through the district. Some of those are run through outside organizations. When we don't approve field trips if there's not a game plan to support kids who couldn't attend if they didn't have the resource.
So say that again.
So we do not approve field trips if there is not a game plan to support kids who couldn't afford it, to pay for it, that would want to attend.
Even if the field trip was like a close-up sort of a situation.
Yeah, we ask that if a parent group is sponsoring it, that the parent group make sure that there's resources available for any child who'd want to attend. There's districts that have gotten into big trouble.
Mm-hmm.
For charging fees for field trips. The one thing, the one kind of trip you can, for science camp, there's science camp you can legally charge, but we work to make sure that every child can participate. And we ask our PTAs to raise money each year to help support making sure every one of our fifth graders can go to science camp.
And the Ed Foundation is like a private partner that also supports that too. Mm-hmm. So there's multiples.
Hey,
Sheila? Yeah, I just say those big ticket trips that Jeff and John Vagliato take every summer are not funded through the school, not school sponsored.
Yet he probably meets up. Let's pretend
teacher X, Y, or Z meets
after school meeting for those who are interested, but it's not sponsored by the school. That's why they can.
And therefore, it's exempt.
And technically, he would need to rent that space right. if they were following the Civic Center.
Incurrent. So they may need other places now.
Hey, Sheila has a question.
Thanks.
So you can blame Jeremy for this because I would never have thought of it on my own. But the like the trips to Washington, D.C. and New York, the students raise money individually, but are you saying that if a student ends up without, that they can't afford it, then the district had a plan? Or are those not district-sponsored? I thought they were district-sponsored.
That's not a district-sponsored trip.
Really? Who would have thought? I mean, I thought it was the school, you know, it was...
No, and I've made it, you know, I make it really clear to schools that we can't do that. Unless there's a plan.
But the school sponsors it, but that's not the district, or...
No, the school is not sponsoring it.
Is it the PTA first, or...
It could be the PTA or a parent group.
You know what I'm talking about, the one that...
Yeah, and they, there was a group at B40 when I was... there, and they met off campus and did their own thing,
okay.
and I didn't advertise for them when I was a principal, and they...
All right. That's
because I couldn't guarantee that I could raise the dollars
right.
for all the kids that wanted to.
Just on this vein, I want to applaud Santa Cruz High School for taking their band to Hawaii, and they are providing funds for students who can't afford that.
That's wonderful.
There's three in our consent agenda that we moved to tonight. The Shakespeare Festival they're going to Las Vegas or Reno. Yes, so lots happens, and they do. And there's a lot of parent groups, as I said, the others that work incredibly hard. They put their energies into it. They would never come to a board meeting. They understand it's not at board level because it can't continue all the way through, so they get into their, they huddle up and get moving.
And they make amazing things happen.
Well, and the kids are connected, so I'm super
there you
happy.
Go. Full circle.
Yeah.
Jeremy,
full circle.
Did you have another comment? Is there a motion?
No.
I guess so.
I move approval.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstain? Motion carries. And we adjourn.
We made it before 9. Because we pulled through the agenda item.
I kind of felt like I was pulling.
No, you did. It was a little confusing, but I think you did really well. You kept track really well. So good job.
Because
that was a lot of decimal points. Because I had a hard time keeping track.
Look at my color code.
That's awesome. I was.
That's great. And Nancy was like, how did she manage to do it too? I am going to keep this and inform Nancy of both of us.
Thank
okay.
you.
Because if I don't keep it, I'll
forget. I put it in my phone as well.
I'll take my children myself. So I'll have the pleasure
of taking them. Because I can do that now.
I was thinking it.
I love that.
I was like,
but the amazing part was that it was versus like, Marianne and Julia waiting
right.
for us to get through all the felonies.
But it's well, I understand that sometimes they think
sometimes
they
are clear all of those tonight.
Could have been done, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to make myself think that way more.
Rocco,
you know, like when something that you want
and you look at
right, there's no public letting me ask.
Sorry, I had to cancel.
But I am at the point now where I'm like, okay, it's close to 9, whatever it is, I don't care anymore. Time has had its effect on me.
Why did you tell me about when your mail ran? I'm busy Monday, Wednesday,
get too old for this body. I said I'm getting too old for this.
Sorry.
Do you still feel young?
Oh, gosh.
She wasn't in any shape.
Can't you tell?
But I'm really excited about what they're doing.
I'm like noticing a little tone in your voice all night that no one would have picked up, but it's kind of like, okay, next thing. Let's move it along here, guys. That's what cracked me up with the Pledge of Allegiance. You're like, all right, Pledge of Allegiance, I Pledge of Allegiance. And I was like, you get up now, you start talking, or else you don't get to.
Well, very impressive, ma'am. With all the things that got pulled, I was afraid we'd be here all night. Very nicely done.